This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
شما در این قرن معجزه کردید. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our listeners to our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This is a program dedicated to the memory of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, and I'm your host on this program, Ijaz Hussain. Once again, I'm joined by my good friend and expert guest, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, on this program. I'd like to say salam to him and welcome him to this program.
Alaykum salam rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much, sir, for being with us once again and accepting our invitation. Sir, we're going to speak about unity.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul. I remember some very beautiful things that he was saying about, you know, the unity of the ummah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about, you know, not being Sunni or Shia, but being Muslim. And, you know, going to each other's mosques and being with each other, praying with each other. We even see that in Iraq even today, that they're, you know, because of the violence from the Takfiris, we even see the Sunnis and Shias now even praying together and being martyred together.
Exactly.
In the mosques. You know, these horrible car bombs that go off in Baghdad, you know, we are seeing that all the time, these horrific scenes where Muslims are being slaughtered during prayer, which, you know, leaves one, you know, wondering, you know, exactly, you know, what's going on. But the Imam, as I say, may God bless his great soul, emphasized this unity a great deal. And we see the need for this unity every day and every moment. So, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, without further ado, I leave the stage entirely to you to give us your take on that.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what you mentioned is exactly, you know, the important point, which is that you have an Islamic leader with all those things that we've talked about so many times and
That's
all
right.
those important matters, both religiously and also politically and globally. And one of his main points and one of the things that he emphasizes repeatedly is Islamic unity.
Yes.
Now, this is a man who is a, as we've mentioned many times before, a clergy and a scholar and somebody who is completely and 100% coming out of the school of Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
So, one might think if one doesn't really know the school of Ahlul Bayt or if one doesn't know a person like Imam.
Very good point, yes.
Well, he should be, you know, a prime candidate for, you know, causing problems.
Causing problems, yes, and, as we've seen in other traditions.
And,
yes.
you know, being very hostile towards other Islamic denominations.
True.
And yet...
He didn't do that.
He does the opposite of that. He
Wonderful.
Calls for Islamic unity.
Wonderful.
Because there's two aspects of that.
Please.
Of what he did. This is my analysis of it. Of course, sure. I'm sure there might be other analyses of why he was doing it. My analysis is that one was that it came out of the school of Ahlul Bayt because we see that during the time of the presence of the imams,
excellent,
they never try to
no.
divide the ummah.
They never did.
That even in the worst conditions, even when the khulafa were killing them and their families,
that's right,
they tried to maintain
the unity of the ummah.
Okay?
Very good.
And they realized that this is of, you know, supreme importance.
Of course.
And there's no point in, you know, the ummah breaking up and, you know, different denominations.
Or different groups.
Fighting each other and setting up rival this and that.
No.
So it comes directly as everything with Imam.
Sure.
Out of the example and the sunnah of the Prophet and, you know, the Imams.
Sure.
Of maintaining, you know, that unity. The second aspect of it is really this complete and total political astuteness and cleverness that Imam always had.
Yes. The wisdom that we were talking
he
about
was
before.
Completely, and I'm talking about politically.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he had the greater wisdom, but he was also an extremely clever politician in terms of understanding tactically and strategically what needs to be done at what point.
Point, yes.
I would just want to make a little reference to another subject just to prove my bigger point.
Please do, yes.
Many people at the time of the revolution were insisting that the imperial army, that the Iranian army that was part of the Shah's regime should be dissolved.
Right.
An imam stood firm like a rock saying it will not be dissolved, and that many of the soldiers and many of the officers are not part of the Shah's thinking and, you know, weren't killing people, and that this would be a great catastrophe for the country.
If this army was dissolved.
If we dissolved the army. Mm. Not only that, he even wrote letters and spoke to the officers and said, you're part of us. You are, you know, you're our children. We're together in this. You know, you can be your own boss.
Wonderful.
This wasn't, you know, you don't need the American advisors. You yourself have the capabilities. Mm. And many people in the army at that time were actually quite religious. So this was a, you know, they were trying to portray this image as the army being like the army of Turkey or Egypt, which is completely
irreligious. Yeah, but they had religious sympathies.
But most of the members of the army, whether it was Air Force or Army, the sure. ground troops, or whether it was even the Navy, had religious backgrounds.
Yes.
And Imam knew this.
Ah.
And he was very clever in not doing this, because at that time you had many of these, you know, later we turned out like the, you know, these terrorists that are now, you know, going to...
Yes, you're referring to the MKO, aren't you?
Right.
Yes.
These terrorists that, alhamdulillah, thank God, no longer
yes,
really
no
exist.
Yes, no longer exist now.
They were pressing Imam at that time, oh, dissolve the army, we will be the new army.
Sure.
And can you imagine if that would have happened?
Oh, my God.
Right? So this is part of the cleverness.
Yes.
The other part of the cleverness of Imam was, again, as we've talked about many times, understanding who the real and the main enemy is.
Yes.
The real and the main enemy at that time are and is America and Israel.
That's right.
And one of the ways in which they cause trouble is by
dividing
the Muslims.
Yes.
Sunni Shia,
creating tensions amongst
inter Shia, inter Sunni, Takfiri, this, that, whatever.
Sure.
And so when Imam, as this religious man that he is, as this person who is a complete, you know, representative and leader of the Shias, comes out and he forcefully talks about unity and Islamic unity.
Sure.
And not only does that in terms of his speech, but also does it in action.
In action, yes.
We see that when the Islamic Republic of Iran is established, where in the constitution it is mentioned that the official religion is the Ja'fari madhab, where we talk about all the basis of the law being the Ja'fari law. And yet we also see that it is also a time where there's a renaissance of the Sunni population.
That's
and
right.
areas that they live, in the sense that they are allowed to and they practice their own madhab. They have their own courts. They have their own, you know, systems in terms of their personal law.
You sure?
Okay. They're not governed in personal law by the Ja'fari law. And they have representatives, and they're
in the parliament. Yes,
you know they're part of the normal structure of the society.
Society, yes,
and yes,
along with other minorities.
And yes,
as
there
well.
Might have been from history and, you know, historically speaking, some deprivations in some of the area because they do live in marginal areas, for example, in the west or in the east. So
sure.
That's a different issue that has you know actually very little to do with their denomination, more of a geographic and historic issue.
Yes,
but in terms of them being able to live in this Islamic Republic in a dignified way, nobody doubts that. And they themselves are the best, you know, testament of that. And you know, you see what happened over the generation, the last two, three generations. You really see a marked improvement. And you know, many of the areas, especially if you look at the southeast in Balochistan, Sistan Balochistan, you really had very high illiteracy rates before the revolution. And now literally everyone, there's schools, there's literacy, there's, you know, development in a way that was, you know, unimaginable years ago.
Sure.
All of it, you know, under the rule of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is based on the Imami school of Islam. So even within Iran, and, you know, they always try to bring in like side issues like, oh, there, you know, in Tehran, there is no you know, Imam, you know, they don't have the Friday prayers for the Sunnis. Well, you know, you go in all the – in most of the cities where the Sunnis are the majority, you have Friday prayers which are you know, headed by the
sure.
by the Sunni
absolutely.
Denomination. And sure. the Shias go there and, you know, there's joint prayers like you were saying. Sure. And, you know, these are not things that, you know, if people want to cause trouble, they can always find reasons to do that. But the yes. reality is completely different.
Yes.
This is on the national level. On the international level, we see that Imam immediately talks about, you know, supporting, for example, the Palestinians. Well, that's as true. We always say, are the Palestinians Shia or Sunni?
They're Sunni.
Well, they're Sunni.
Yes.
Okay? Mm. We're talking about, you know, Imam from the very beginning not allowing this, you know, evil cancer, whatever you want to call it, sure. to seep in into yes. the minds of people. And unfortunately, what we see, and this brings us to the situation we're currently in, and all the things we've discussed in terms of Syria and, you know, Ali Saud and Takfiris and so on. We see that, unfortunately, from the beginning, as it was during the time of the British, the main tool for causing division within the Muslim world are the Ali Saud and the Takfiris.
Exactly.
By how? By declaring everybody else to be kafir.
Yes. Non-believers.
Non-believers. Every other Muslim except for us, according to them, yes. is a non-believer. That's why, because you were mentioning, you know, being bombed during prayer.
Sure.
Well, which Muslim would kill another Muslim during prayer?
During prayer. Exactly.
I mean, this is horrendous. It's completely reprehensible. I mean, this is something no Muslim would do to another mother, to
no.
another Muslim.
No.
I mean, imagine, you know, family feud arguments, you know, theological sure. disputes.
Sure.
Well, you know, one of the red lines of, you know, where you don't go is you don't kill people during prayer.
Exactly. But they crossed it.
Okay.
The Takfiris have crossed it.
So, you know, this is bad.
This is really bad.
Bad in the sense that, you know, you have now a legion of monsters, of shayateen, you know, with big beards and, you know.
Yes.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they have the shape of – and it's actually – you know what? It's actually I would like to say it this way. They don't even look – they're a caricature of Islam.
Yes, they're a caricature of Islam. You're
okay.
right.
Okay. Yes. I mean, we have – you know, we have a tradition of having beards. You know, I have a beard. Right?
Yes. yes.
you know, the ulama, they usually have longer beards or whatever. I mean, this is part of the sunnah of the Prophet and, and you know. So there's nothing wrong with having a beard.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you just look at these guys and they're caricatures.
Yes.
They don't look normal.
No.
They don't, you know, there's something wrong with them.
Something wrong with them, yes.
You know, when we say extremist, you could just tell they're like.
There's something psychopathic about them, yes.
So. We don't even have them because I was going to say we have these people who are supposedly the representatives of Islam or they look Muslim. They actually don't really look Muslim.
No.
They look like a caricature of Islam.
Islam, yes.
Literally.
Literally, yes.
And they are portrayed as being, you know, the representative of Islam.
Hmm.
You see in Syria, I mean, it's nuts. I mean, look at what they did in Syria.
I know, it's horrendous.
And the ones that are funding the whole thing and wanting these guys to be the representative of Islam in the world and to wipe out everybody else are the Ali Saud.
Yes.
And the reason the Ali Saud want this is not because they have some sort of a deep attachment to the, you know, and love for, you know, Abdul Wahhab, you know, or Ibn Taymiyyah or one of these guys who is supposedly the quote-unquote scholars of the Takfiris,
yes.
right? Because you can't even call them scholars.
Scholars, no, right? You can't.
You can't really call them scholars.
No.
It's not that. It's not because they are, you know, holding up the flag of you know, pure Salaf Islam.
Yeah.
Because Salaf Islam doesn't kill other Muslims.
No, it doesn't.
Right?
No.
So it's really about using these and exploiting these ignorant people in order to stay in power.
Exactly.
In Saudi Arabia, in order to have control over the oil fields.
Sure.
Which is, you know, billions and billions. In order to have control over Mecca and Medina, which is billions and billions.
Billions, yes.
And this is all it's about.
Yes.
You know, neither King Abdullah nor any of the other, you know.
No, it's all about money and
old
power.
Guys and, you know, brothers and half-brothers and cousins and uncles. None of those guys care about, you know, pure Islam.
No, they don't. They care about power and money.
They care about Ali Saud staying in power, and they will do whatever it takes to do that. And if it takes them, you know, unleashing, you know, a legion of wacko, you know, terrorist organ eaters and, you know, cannibals and heart eaters.
Yes.
and, you know, people who will cut off heads with – I'm purposely mentioning the things they're doing. So yes, people exactly. realize what they're doing. I apologize.
They literally sawed the heads off.
They didn't saw – used kitchen knives. Okay? And, you know, going around, for example, cutting the heads off priests.
Yes.
You know in Islam horrible. And in the Quran what it says?
Yes, I know.
It says we have to protect the churches.
Yes, we have to protect the people of the book.
We have all the rivayat that talk about, you know, us – you know,
we are not allowed to touch them.
This is not
violate
they are
them
not
in any
kafir.
Shape or form.
They're not kafir in the sense of being
no,
kafir
they're
harbi.
Not.
They're not. We're not in war against them. They're living under the protection of Islam and Muslims. You're not allowed to do this, you crazy person. You have to respect them. And yet they do it.
They do it. So that shows the real evil nature.
It
of
shows that they are not Muslim. They don't understand Islam.
No,
they don't know the Quran. They
no.
don't know anything.
No, they don't.
Okay? They're just there to...
create
help
chaos.
The Saudis and the Israelis cause division in Islam.
Exactly.
So, having said all that,
yes,
we get to the current times. Well, we see that the Supreme Leader, may God protect him,
yes, please,
continuing the line of Imam, talking about that we have to maintain Islamic unity. So many years now, he's been talking about Islamic unity. At a time when others weren't even talking about it, he was talking about that we should have Islamic
sure.
unity.
Sure, yes.
He's talking about the fact that this division, Sunni Shia divisions, are the making of the enemies of Islam. And it's very interesting. Again, you have a person like the Supreme Leader, again, Ayatollah Khamenei, you know, a leader of the Shias. He's from the, you know, Imami school. And he talks about that it's takfiris, mainly on the so-called, he says they call themselves Sunni, but they're not Sunni. And then he says there's even some on the Shia side.
Yes.
He talks about them. That,
this
you know,
kind of extremism.
This kind of extremism and takfirism, whatever you want to call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, from the Shia side.
Coming from the Shia side and condemning it.
Yes.
And not only condemning it, but issuing the fatwas that are required to condemn it. Talking about not cursing, you know, the personalities that are important to the different denominations.
Exactly.
Talking about unity. Okay?
Sure.
So it's not simply, you know, rhetoric. It's actually action.
No. It's also education, isn't it, as well? Because he's educating us as how to be brothers with one another.
Exactly. Because this is what Islam is.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what it's all about.
Right. And the point is simply this. The differences that we might have pale in comparison to the dangers we face from the enemies.
And the enemy, yes, that's true.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is the point. Nobody is trying to, you know, compromise on our deep-held beliefs. And, you know, everybody knows how much we love the Ahlul Bayt and how much we consider them to be the way in
the
which...
the best examples for us to follow.
And the way in which we can, you know, get close to God.
Get close to God and understand Islam, of
because
course.
They are the ones that teach us real Islam.
Yes.
Okay? They're the ones that tell us, you know, the understand. This is our basic belief as Imami Muslims.
Absolutely.
Is that we have thaqalain, we have Quran, and we have Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
And they're together.
They're together, yes.
Okay, and if you don't have one, then you don't have Islam.
Exactly.
So if you don't have Quran, but you have Ahlul Bayt, you don't have Islam. If you have Ahlul Bayt, if you have Ahlul Bayt and you don't have Quran, you don't have Islam.
Exactly.
So, you know, this is our belief. So nobody's trying to compromise on that or trying to, you know, step back.
No, that's not what it's about.
But you have to look at the same Ahlul Bayt and how they behaved?
Exactly.
Number
That's
one.
The point.
Number
yes.
two, you have to also be clever. And you have to understand who the real enemy is.
Yes.
And so this is why, because then people might say, well, you always keep going on about Ali Saud and, you know, takfiris and, well, aren't you doing exactly that? Well, our point in all these is that they are the greatest, one of the greatest barriers to Islamic unity.
This is the problem.
Because they are neither Sunni nor Shia.
No. They are the enemies of Islam.
They are not a denomination of Islam.
The enemies of
they
Allah.
They look like, you know, they are Islamic, although,
they look like caricatures of Islam.
Right? So it's not about, you know, well, why, if you're saying all this and then you're going ending up attacking the takfiris. Well, the takfiris don't even consider us Muslim, so why should we?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I mean, this is the point. Yes.
So we don't consider them to really be Muslim.
No.
Because no Muslim does these things. It's not simply about saying it with your tongue.
No.
It's not about just, you know, saying shahadatain.
No, it's all on video. It's all on the internet.
It's not just
now.
About saying shahadatain.
No.
Okay, so you say shahadatain and then you end up doing everything which is against, you know, the
I mean,
the
I,
most
I,
basic principles
yeah, I was
of Islam.
Saying, I was
so how
saying,
can you say that person is a Muslim?
Exactly.
Just because they have a beard?
Sure.
Just because they say Allahu Akbar?
No, I mean, the thing is, this is what I was saying in one program myself on this subject, on the very subject of takfiris. I was suggesting that, you know, I mean, we're talking about democracy and talking about systems of government that give quality of life, progression to its people. But what are we going to get with if the takfiris are in power? We have to eat the liver of our neighbors? I mean, is that the way we're going to carry
well,
on?
Well, I think this is what has become so painfully clear in Syria.
Yeah.
Is they were trying to portray this as, you know, the Sunni masses rising up against the evil Alawi dictatorship and the Shia dictatorship.
Sure.
And the majority of Sunnis were like, hey, wait a second. You know, we don't want to be
with them.
No, we're not with them.
No, no.
Okay?
Because I don't want to eat my neighbor
this
tomorrow.
Is not what Sunni Islam is.
Yes.
Okay? Mm. This is a problem that we've had over the last 100 years, is that these takfiris and these so-called Salafis and Wahhabis, and, you know, there's even distinctions between them.
Them as well, yes, true.
Right? Within them, there's even different grades and shades, right? Sure. But let's just call it Wahhabis and takfiris. Mm. The problem we've had is they were successful in claiming that they're Sunnis, and yet they're not Sunnis.
No.
They don't speak for the Sunnis.
No, they don't.
And it has to do with the fact that many of the Sunnis in the last 100 years were at a very low level of understanding of religion.
Yes.
In terms of literacy, and it has to go with the civilizational decline that existed in the Muslim world.
That's right.
It has to do with the fact that you had imperial powers coming in. You really didn't have good teachers of Islam.
No.
I'm not saying there were none. There were some.
Yeah.
But the level was low. And so when you had this funding and this movement coming out of Saudi Arabia with all that oil money
and all that
support by the Americans and the British, they were able to
hijack
a lot of the a lot of the Sunni mosques and centers and so on.
You know, even this al-Nusra front at the moment in Syria, you know, who are the caricatures of Islam as you described it, even they're killing each other, you know, even in within their own groupings as well, that even that there are several groups that are supposed to be in the Free Syrian Army, but it's neither free nor Syrian.
Or an army.
And they're killing all, you know, each other as well.
Right.
So, I mean, what, that's the thing. What are you going to get at the end of the day?
It's a dead end.
It is a dead end.
You know, this is because there's no reality, you know, as the basis of it. This is why you have the movements that happened, for example, in Iran. Or you have movements such as Hezbollah, which happened in
That's
Lebanon,
right. yeah.
you know, being successful in the long run because they're based on reality. They're based on truth.
They're based on truth, yes.
They're based on Islam, which is according to the Quran, according to the Sunnah.
Principles of the Quran,
okay?
Yes, absolutely.
And these takfiris are not according to the Quran and the Sunnah. They are the opposite of the Quran and Sunnah.
Exactly.
And believe me, this is the important point, and I really hope that the listeners, you know, can take this away from what we're saying.
Thank you for that.
When we say that the takfiris are not based on Islam, that doesn't mean we're saying they're not Sunnis.
No.
Because if you look at Sunnis, the four madhahib, the different scholars, you know, they have a lot of, you know, the basis is Quran, the basis is the hadith and the rivayat that exist in that school.
Sure.
And they're much closer to the reality of Islam than anything, you know, comparable to it. So don't be fooled. Don't let them say that we are Sunnis. Takfiris are not Sunnis.
No.
Okay?
No.
On the other hand, and I would want to emphasize this, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we have some, and I will clearly say it, mercenaries, some people who are paid by the Americans and the British, who put on, you know, Shia clothing, and they have Shia names, and they have Shia programs on TV and on satellite stations. Mm. And they are just as bad as these takfiris, because their takfiris in the other direction.
Yes, right.
Now, of course, they don't send, you know, armies into Syria to cut out the hearts of
people, but it's very damaging.
They're part of the same plan and game.
Game.
You have these extremists on this side trying to provoke and trying to, you know, going into Shia towns, for example, and killing, you know, kids and women and whatever, you know, desecrating graves. I mean, what Muslim would go and, you know, break open the grave of a Sahaba of the Prophet?
I mean, this is ridiculous.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
So who cares if he was friends with Ali or not? He's Sahaba of the Prophet.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
Why would you do that? What Muslim would do that? Okay?
No, it's unthinkable.
So that's then you have on the other side, you have the Shia mercenaries, the so-called, whatever, the takfiri Shias, you know?
Right.
Stoking the flames
of division.
Right.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, this is this, and
yeah,
calling people names.
And cursing and swearing
for
no reason.
Right.
Yeah. Which is forbidden in Islam.
Against the fatwa of all the Maraji.
Al Maraji, yes.
Okay?
They're not allowed to do that.
When the things were getting out of hand in Iraq, they asked Ayatollah Sistani, may God protect him. He said, you know, they asked him, "Are the Sunnis our brothers?" And he said, "They're not only not your brothers; they're your heart and soul."
My God!
This is what he told his followers. He said, "They're not only your brothers; they're your heart and soul. You have to sacrifice yourself for them."
For them.
This is the school of Ahlul Bayt.
Exactly.
Okay? And people are seeing it. Hmm. People are seeing this. I'm talking about the Sunnis.
Yes.
I'm talking about the majority of Sunnis. I'm talking about the Arabs, you know, of the different, whether it's Sunnis or Christians. They're seeing what the reality is. They're not getting fooled by the Saudis and by their, you know, crazy
Their vicious
preachers
propaganda,
and,
I guess.
And, you know, yes. All these guys who come on TV and just spew hate and
yeah,
division.
It is. They're spewing
and just
hatred,
remember
yes.
this, after all is said and done, who benefits? Who benefits?
Israel.
And it's clear
that
Israel and America and the enemies of Islam benefit from
of
these divisions.
So why would you international community, isn't
why,
it?
Why would you do something that benefits Israel and America?
Exactly.
Against your fellow Muslim.
Exactly.
Why would you do that? Mm. So alhamdulillah, these things are being said.
Yes, exposed.
Alhamdulillah, the majority of brothers and sisters
are beginning to see
of
now
the
reality.
They're also seeing the reality of Shias, that the Shias are not, you know, these extremists, that they are, you know, mushrik, whatever, all the
And that Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, was quite right about what he was saying at that, you know, 35 years ago, that this is going to be
because,
a major
because
problem.
Because we've shown with our action in the last 30, you know, 5 years, what we say, we also deliver with our action. We stick to our friends. We are not extremists. We want everybody to live peacefully.
Sure.
We don't discriminate based on denomination. And this is the way of Ahlul Bayt. This is the way of Imam Ali alayhi salam. This is the way of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. This is the way of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Absolutely.
This is who we follow because they are the ones that
May
teach
God
us real
them.
Islam. And it's good. I'm happy because things are moving in this direction.
That's right.
And the key is going to be the Arab populations. Mm. This is why the Saudis are freaking out.
Freaking out.
They're freaking out.
Even with the Muslim Brotherhood, in spite of all the mistakes they were making, they couldn't even tolerate them because they knew that what big a threat this is to their power.
It all comes down to the Arab populations being, you know, becoming familiar with real Islam.
Yes.
Looking at the real Sunnah of the Prophet.
That's right.
Looking at, you know, great Arab personalities and leaders, the greatest Arab ever, Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Islam, of course,
right?
Of course.
Right? So this is not something that, you know.
Very nicely put.
It's their own heritage.
It is their own heritage.
It's their own. It's
Excellent
not like some
point,
Ajami,
yes.
whatever, Majusi
no, no, it's their
thing
heritage.
Being. You know, when we're talking about Imam Ali alayhi salam, we're talking about, you know, we're talking about the noblest of noble Arabs.
Arabs.
You know.
My God.
Bani Hashim,
exactly.
Okay. So, you know, this is something that, you know, alhamdulillah, through the efforts of media to a certain extent, through the realities that people have seen
on the ground, yes.
The way Iran has behaved, the way, for example, the successes that Hezbollah has had, the changes that have occurred in Iraq.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
People are waking up. And this is why the Saudis are completely freaking out. This is why the Israelis are completely freaking out.
Yes.
Because they know that once the Arabs become familiar with
the
school of Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
And again, please, let me be very clear about this. It's not about labels.
No.
We're not talking about people becoming Shia. It's not about that.
No, it's not about a conversion business.
It's about, you know, call yourself whatever you want.
Want, yes.
Just look at the teaching of Ahlul Bayt.
Right, and learn about Islam.
And you will see that this is with fitra. This is your fitra.
Exactly.
If you read Nahjul Balagha, if you read Saif-e Sajjadiyah by Imam Sajjad, alayhi salam. Imam Sajjad, Saif-e Sajjadiyah is a miracle. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing.
Of course.
And if you're Arab and you understand Arabic, you know, it will immediately touch your heart. You will understand that this person is not a normal person, that this person is the one that's following and continuing the tradition of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and is the successor of the Prophet.
And trying to lead us towards perfection.
I'm talking about Imam Sajjad
and
Saif-e Sajjadiyah and the prayers that are in there and the way he talks to God. Okay? Anybody who has a heart, anybody who is a little bit sincere, if you read Saif-e Sajjadiyah, how can you not be moved by it?
Exactly.
How can you be not by touched by it as a Muslim? So this is my message, is that don't be fooled. Takfiris are not Sunnis. It's not about labels. It's about following real Islam.
Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, on that note, I'd like to thank you for your valuable contribution on the program today. I hope our listeners have benefited from what you've said today. Thank you very much for that. Okay. And for our listeners, it just leaves me to say, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all.
Thank you for listening and goodbye.